And welcome back to the Court of Appeals, November 4. This is case number two of three oral matters that we have before the court. I am Judge Sleater presiding. Judges Gaitis and Kirk are joining me. And this is file A210794, State of Minnesota, Minnesota Judicial Branch Respondent versus Teamsters Local 320, who is appellant. And counsel, you should see the clock in the corner. And so keep an eye on that. And for some reason, if we have any technological issues that might cause us not to hear you or see you, or more importantly, I guess, not hear you, but we'll stop the clock and wait till we're reconnected. And no recording of this proceeding is otherwise allowed than what we do here in the judicial branch. And it will be available on the branch's website within 24 hours. We do ask the counsel, as you begin your comments, to identify yourself again for the record. And so, counsel for appellant, you may identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Judge. Good morning, Your Honors. Kevin Beck, B-E-C-K, on behalf of the appellant, Teamsters Local 320. We're here today on a de novo review of a district court's grant of a vacating an arbitration award. On this review, the appellant respectfully asked the Court of Appeals to reverse the decision. An arbitrator is the final judge of both law and fact, including the interpretation of the terms of any collective bargaining agreement, and his award will not be reviewed or set aside for mistake of either law or fact in the absence of fraud, mistake, in applying his own theory, misconduct, or other disregard of duty. That is unfortunately precisely what the district court did in vacating the award in this case. There's no evidence or allegation of fraud, mistake, misconduct, or any other disregard of duty by the arbitrator. Instead, the district court vacated the award because it disagreed with the arbitrator's decision on the merits of a preliminary decision regarding arbitrability. Courts will not overturn an arbitration award merely because they disagree with an arbitrator's decision. Instead, every reasonable presumption must be exercised in favor of the finality and validity of the arbitration award.
Aren't you overstating that, counsel, as it relates to the question of whether the issue is arbitrable in the first place, which is what we have here?
I realize there is some case law out there, Your Honor, specific to arbitrability and in case that it is a decision that can be made by the courts. But and here we have a decision on arbitrability prior to any kind of decision on the merits of the matter. And even under a higher burden, the district court still erred when it granted the motion to vacate for a number of reasons. In particular, Your Honors, let me pull up my notes. The district court read into PELRA Chapter 486, the court reporter statute, and the collective bargaining agreement language that simply isn't there. 179A.101 Subdivision 1F, which is PELRA, provides that notwithstanding any provision of this chapter or any other law to the contrary, judges may appoint and remove court reporters at their pleasure. 486.01, the court reporter statute, provides that each judge may appoint a competent stenographer as reporter of the court to hold office during the judge's pleasure. CBA Section 3.4 defines the appointing authority as a judge or judicial officer, and 3.4 defines employer as the Minnesota judicial branch. Particular note in 21.5 of the CBA, it reaffirms the statutory authority. It says nothing in this article shall be construed to limit in any way the right of the appointing authority to terminate their court reporter at their pleasure.
So Mr. Beck, I just want to point out one of my concerns and maybe you can address that. And that relates to the language in the CBA that specifically indicates that the administrative review process is something that doesn't occur when we're talking about decisions made by a judge. And specifically, I'm referring to sections 9.1 and 9.5 of the CBA. How is that? How are we to get around that and agree with you?
And the arbitrator addressed this, Your Honor, in the sense that the arbitrator said this isn't a decision challenging the appointing authority's ability, the judge's ability to remove a court reporter, which is exempted from the administrative complaint process. The challenge, the administrative complaint process that the arbitrator found was arbitrable was the decision of the judicial branch as the employer. So, and the arbitrator specifically addressed this in the sense that he said that there's nothing inherently contrary to any of the statutes cited by the employer allowing employees access to the procedure set forth in the CBA, meaning the administrative complaint procedure. The statutes specifically refer to judges. The CBA specifically defines the appointing authority as judges, and nowhere in the statutes is there a reference to the judicial branch having the power to terminate a court reporter at will or at its pleasure. In other words, the arbitrator correctly found that there's a distinction between a judge's ability to remove a court reporter from his or her courtroom or from his or her appointment, but that doesn't extend to a unilateral at-will ability of the employer, defined separately in both the CBA and the statutes, to remove the same court reporter at will from employment with the judicial branch as a whole.
I guess my difficulty with that position, though, is if that were the case, why wouldn't the CBA expressly address that? I mean, that analysis is gleaned entirely from silence in the CBA. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I would agree the CBA doesn't say either way. To your point, Your Honor, the CBA doesn't say the employer as the judicial branch has the authority to terminate an employee at will, or it doesn't say the employer, the judicial branch's ability to remove a court reporter or discharge a court reporter is exempted from the administrative complaint process. So yes, I would agree that the CBA is silent, and that silence does not equate to at-will employment from the judicial branch. The statutes and the CBA all speak in terms of an appointing authority, a judge's authority to remove a court reporter, or they serve at the judge's pleasure. But there's nothing anywhere in the statutes or the CBA that extends that authority to the judicial branch as the employer. To the contrary, PELRA requires public employees subject to bargaining agreements be subject to or be have the ability to go to arbitration on all written discipline, including discharge, and that's 1798.20 subdivision 4. And that's the distinction that the fine distinction that the arbitrator made. While a judge may have the ability to remove a court reporter from his or her courtroom, the arbitrator did not exceed or did not clearly exceed his authority when he determined that that right does not extend to the judicial branch as the defined in public employer.
What you're suggesting, though, counsel, is absurd.
Sorry, what was that?
What you're suggesting is absurd.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor, that there's nothing absurd in providing due process to a public employee when their career is on the line. All we're asking for
nothing in the collective bargaining agreement, nothing in the judicial statute, nor PELRA calls for that. In fact, there's specific language in all of those to say that this isn't going to happen. How would we pay for all the court reporters who have lifetime employment but nothing to do?
And I think
we're fighting our budgets year after year as it is.
And I think, Your Honor, you're misunderstanding the impact of the arbitrator's award. The arbitrator made no finding that the judicial branch can't terminate an employee or that the judicial branch has to keep these employees in perpetuity. What the arbitrator found is that they have to go through the grievance process required by PELRA 1798.20 subdivision 4 for terminating a public employee who has collective bargaining rights. So they can happen simultaneously. The judge can remove a court reporter from his or her courtroom, and the judicial branch, based on the facts presented to it, can determine that it warrants discharge from employment with the branch as well. And as soon as that happens, the payroll stops. And so it's not a budgetary issue.
Mr. Beck, I had a bit of a similar question or follow-up question. The phrase that you used, and I don't know if the arbitrator used it, I think maybe so, conceding essentially the at the pleasure means the judge may remove, and then added the words from his or her courtroom. which obviously doesn't exist in any of these documents. That's the first I've ever heard of that phrase. But let me just ask you a little different question. You're conceding, number one, that that language clearly means they're at-will employees, correct?
I would concede that it means their appointment by that particular judge is at-will.
But assuming then that appointment to work in the judicial branch as a court reporter for that judge is at will, would that not your client's position be inconsistent with all the case law then in any employment scenario where someone hires someone at will? And so I hire you to work in my office and now I discharge you tomorrow. You can only leave my office, but the employer, you maintain employment under that scenario because I can only discharge you from my physical surrounding, my courtroom, my office. And so you're in limbo until some other department picks you up.
Well,
isn't that the extension of what your argument is?
No, Your Honor. And the difference being is that when you appoint a court reporter, you are by definition under the collective bargaining agreement, not that court reporter's employee. Or employer, excuse me, the employer is the Minnesota judicial branch. The parties bargain for and agree to that definition. The Bureau of Mediation Services recognized the Minnesota judicial branch as the public employer.
I think I saw that in your briefing, except that who is the appointing authority? What does that mean then, other than to appoint, which means that they've been given authority to hire? And for whom? That could only be the judicial branch. The judge doesn't pay the salary. I never paid any salary. I didn't, but I did hire and I would fire.
I agree that you do not pay the salary because the employer, again, is the Minnesota judicial branch. And 21.5 or Article 21 of the CBA recognizes the circumstances where the judge as the appointing authority is no longer around, whether it's retirement, resignation. Yet the court reporter stays on the payroll of the public employer being the Minnesota judicial branch. So the CBA does contemplate continued employment even after the appointing authority is no longer around. And so our position is not inconsistent. I realize it's a very fine line, but it's a line that has been bargained over. And to all of these questions, the judicial branch has not bargained for language that gives them as the defined public employer, the right to terminate employment at will.
Well, Mr. Beck, let's talk about the bargaining process a little bit, if you don't mind. The judicial branch, in connection with its request to the arbitrator to reconsider the award, submitted a number of materials, including materials discussing the bargaining process in this case and how, in fact, the at-will employment issue was at the very heart of the bargaining process, at least initially. What would you have this court do with those supplemental materials? Ignore them?
I wouldn't have you ignore them, Your Honor. The arbitrator ruled on this and is ruling on his request for reconsideration and said it wasn't properly brought before him. And it's something that could be brought before him at a arbitration hearing on the merits. And that this
But didn't those documents concern the issue that was in fact before him, which was arbitrability?
I don't think so. And on top of that, the arbitrator ruled in his request for reconsideration that even if he considered those documents, they still didn't change the impact of his decision, which was that these are separate and distinct entities, being the public employers, the judicial branch, and their requirements to both bargain and also comply with the provisions of PELRA, notably 1798.20, and the appointing authority statutory rights and recognized in the contract to remove court reporters. And you're right, Judge Sleater, it doesn't say at from his or her courtroom, but it implies the appointment. The appointment from an appointing authority, a judge in this case, is specific to that judge. But it isn't, you are not as judges paying wages. You are not the employer. You as judges are not part of the bargaining process. The bargaining process and the employer is the judicial branch. And so while you as a judge may have the ability to remove an appointment unique to you, all that Teamsters is asking is that employment with the employer, being the judicial branch, is subject to the grievance process, the administrative complaint process, and ultimately arbitration as required under PELRA.
Mr. Beck, 1798.20 subdivision 2 starts out with the provision, no contract provisions contrary to law shall be in conflict, or no provision in a contract shall be in conflict with the laws of Minnesota. Would that not in and of itself then exclude, because in the PELRA itself, of course, that has the language you cited to, the at-will language, as does the separate 480, I forget the number now, statute that's long been in existence previous to PELRA. So wouldn't that just stop also the discussion that somehow this is an unbargained for loss?
It wouldn't, Your Honor, because all of those statutes that you reference do not refer to the Minnesota judicial branch. They refer to the authority of the judge. The judge has the appointing authority. There's no reference in any statute that gives the authority, extends that authority to terminate employment at will to the judicial branch. And so the arbitrator specifically found there's nothing inherently contrary to any of the statutes cited by the employer allowing these employees access to the procedures set forth in the CBA. Those statutes specifically refer to judges. The CBA specifically defines the appointing authority as judges. Nowhere in those statutes is there a reference to the Minnesota judicial branch having the power to terminate a court reporter at will or at its pleasure. There's nothing in I know my time is up, I'll finish. The arbitrator's decision that this matter is arbitrable is within his authority as an arbitrator, within his authority under the collective bargaining agreement to hear this matter. And if there are no more questions, I thank you for your time.
Very well, and you will have 5 minutes of rebuttal as well. And so, counsel for respondent, if you would identify yourself, you may proceed, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. My name is Joe Weiner. I am an assistant attorney general arguing on behalf of the Minnesota Judicial Branch. The district court correctly vacated the arbitration award in this matter that determined that court reporter terminations are arbitrable. The statutes at issue in this case, Section 48601 and 179A101, Subdivision 1F, reflect a balance that the legislature decided between the right of court reporters to collectively bargain for wages and conditions of employment with the judge's authority to hire and fire for a confidential and sensitive position. And there are 5 reasons why the district court was correct in its decision. The first, as the district court found, the plain language of both of those statutes indicates that the court reporters are employees at will, and there is no arbitration available for them. Second, the presumptions of statutory interpretation, if there were any doubt about this, also weigh in favor of finding that there is no arbitration available to court reporters. The legislative history and the intent of the legislature in passing and granting limited collective bargaining rights to court reporters similarly supports this, as well as the terms of the collective bargaining agreement itself, which states again and again that they are at-will employees and that they may be removed at the pleasure of their appointing authority and the course of dealing between the parties over the last 20 years. In terms of the plain language, the statute 486 says what it says, and that is that a judge may appoint a competent stenographer to hold office during the judge's pleasure. And the language shows that they are tied to a specific position. They appoint to a position, similar as a judge is appointed to his or her position. It's different than a general hire or fire idea. It's something that is specific to government. Oftentimes, we see that in the Black's Law Dictionary and Merriam-Webster or other lay dictionaries, and that they hold office. That's the key here. It's not that they have general employment with an employer. They are holding a specific office related to that judge. And that's very similar to what the judge has. And ultimately, what this comes down to is that at the pleasure language, which is at will under the law that this court has found. And for that reason alone, the district court got this correct. Additionally, if there were any concerns or any questions about any of that, the presumptions of statutory interpretation also support that. Appellant's argument is based essentially on a claim that PELRA controls, but that goes against the presumptions here. First of all, the specific provision within PELRA is 179A101 subdivision 1F. And that's the one that says, notwithstanding any other provision of this chapter or any other law. And again, what that is specifically saying is that the general right that is available for arbitration within PELRA is superseded by the statute. And as we know, specific provisions of a statute override the general provisions that are there. I think the arbitrator's decision was based on this claim that remove just means remove from the courtroom and not just remove from employment. And what we see here is in the in pari materiae canon, remove used elsewhere in PELRA is talking about the ending of employment and somebody being pulled out of employment. And I think another thing that's very important for the court to notice is that to the extent that this decision, the arbitrator's decision was based on the general driver's decision, which said that PELRA allowed this, the statute that granted the sheriff and that ability, the ability to hire and fire at will, the language that was used was that the sheriff may remove at his pleasure those individuals. And the remove there is not, I don't know, removed from outside the sheriff's office. It was removed from employment. That's the understanding within the statutes. That's the reason it's there. And truthfully, that notwithstanding clause would have no purpose if this, the idea here was that it was just removed from a courtroom and not otherwise addressing general drivers and the general language in PELRA. Section 179A, 101 sub 1 was also passed later than the general provision of PELRA, and it controls. And as the court recognized, the legislature does not intend an absurd result. And in this case, what that would mean is that somebody is removed from office based on the arbitrator's decision, and then continue to be employed with no work to do over that time. Again, the basis for the determination really seemed to be from the arbitrator, and the argument I believe that the appellants are making is that general drivers controls in this matter, and it simply does not. There was no exception in general drivers like the exception that's in 179A, 101, subdivision 1F. And a statute was enacted after general drivers, and it's presumed that the legislature, when it is enacting a law, knows the law and the judicial interpretations and acts with that understanding. And there would be no reason, it would be pure surplusage to include that language, if not to make clear that the at-will nature of this employment continues. We also see that in terms of the legislative history here. The original bill that granted court reporters collective bargaining rights did not preserve the at-will language. And then what happened was there were discussions, there was concerns. The language was amended to include that subdivision 101 sub 1F. And as a result, the testimony given at the both at the House and the Senate for this shows that this was compromised language to address those concerns about the continued at-will nature of the employment. And that's the testimony.
Can I ask you about that? Is that when the phrase appointing authority, is that the only use in the collective bargaining agreement or time it's used as it relates to judges and court reporters?
So in the statute in 101 is 101 sub 1F, is that the only time that it uses appointing authority?
Well, in the CBA itself, because that seemed to be what the arbitrator focused on, and Mr. Beck is also identifying the language which sets aside appointing authority versus employer. Is that the only instance in which that phrase is used, it relates to judges and court reporters?
No, Your Honor. I believe when throughout the collective bargaining agreement, they refer to the appointing authority and the powers available to the appointing authorities.
But
and
is there a scenario where an appointing authority involves other than a judge and court reporter? Is that's my question.
Within the contract? No, Your Honor. There may be other statutes that refer to an appointing authority. But none of those other statutes that refer to an appointing authority also contain this notwithstanding carve-out language that was specifically included by the legislature. And in regards to the collective bargaining agreement, the contract again and again states the appointment and the removal of court reporters is non-arbitrable. Section 9, which is the administrative review process, which would allow for some type of arbitration, begins and ends saying that the powers granted to a judge are non-arbitrable, and those powers include the appointment and removal. And it closes with language that mirrors Section 486.01. Article 21, which regards separation, says that nothing limits the right to terminate at their pleasure. And I think that's key here. If to the extent that the arbitrator or anybody else was trying to make a distinction between removal and termination of employment, what the contract says in 21.5 is, and I'll read it, nothing in this article shall be construed to limit in any way the right of the appointing authority to terminate their court reporter at their pleasure. And that's to show that for purposes of all of this, this distinction or attempted distinction between removal and termination of employment, there's no basis for it. The parties use them interchangeably. The legislature enacted the law with an understanding that removal meant removal from employment completely, not from a courtroom or a specific position or anything else along that. And we see along with that, a number of times where the term removal is equated with termination throughout the contract. We see that in section 10.3, which relates to job postings. And there they go through potential reasons that a job might be posted. Removal is not one of them, but termination is, and it's included there. In the severance section, 20.1e, they also talk about termination. The other removal section, which is 21.3b, talks about termination. And the separations section that I was just talking about, 21.5, also refers to termination, not just removal. There is no other provision that is mentioned four times within the collective bargaining agreement in the same way that the continued right of judges to appoint and remove their court reporters at will is included in there. And finally, the course of performance over the years between these parties shows this. It was a subject during the initial negotiations, and the judicial branch's interpretation prevailed. The parties understood that employment ended with appointment. And it was within the first contract between these parties, and it has been in every contract since. And this is not a waiver argument. It's just simply a course of performance to show how the parties have interpreted this. And what we've seen is that with 20 involuntary removals between 2001 and 2019, not a single one of them has ever been arbitrated. And in each of those cases, the employment ended. Since Minnesota became a state, judges have had the ability to hire and fire court reporters at will. The radical change that's being suggested here would need to be supported by some specific statutory language if the legislature was going to grant the court reporters that right. In fact, the plain language used in two separate statutes shows the exact opposite, that what the legislature did was carve out the ability of these individuals to challenge their termination from their appointment from a judge. And for that reason, the plain language, as noted by the district court below, the presumptions of interpretation, the legislative history, the collective bargaining agreement, and the course of performance between these parties all show that the at-will nature continues for these court reporters. And for that reason, the judicial branch respectfully requests that the court affirm the decision below and hold that court reporter terminations are non-arbitrable. Unless the court has any other questions, I don't have anything else to say.
I do have one last question. Sorry to jump in right as you're hoping to be done here. My question is this, are you recommending that our opinion in this case be precedential? And I think you actually are. And if so, can you explain your rationale for that?
Certainly, Your Honor. We are requesting that it be precedential. This is a unique issue of law that hasn't come before the court before. It relates specifically to the judges here, but to the extent that the legislature at some point in the future decides to include some type of carve out for a different position, we would like it to be clear to the lawmakers in future that if they were to include such carve-out language, such as the notwithstanding, it would include not just this case, but give them guidance for how to do that if they decided to pursue this in the future.
Very well. Appears there's no other questions. So thank you, counsel. And counsel for appellant, you'll now have 5 minutes to proceed. You may begin. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge. I would just like to touch on this legislative intent argument from respondents. The argument is effectively that because of 1798.101, which specifically recognizes a judge's authority to remove a court reporter, that that somehow extends to the judicial branch. And I would take the opposite position, that Pellrick is silent with respect to the judicial branch's authority. And if the legislature had intended for removal to extend at will to the employer, they could have said that in the statute, but they didn't. For example, it doesn't say in 1798.101 that the judicial branch has the authority to terminate at will. It doesn't say that this is a direct refutation of General Drivers and Arrowhead, which occupy a very similar space in the sense that the courts with respect to probation officers and the sheriff with respect to sheriff's deputies had almost identical statutory authority to remove an employee at their pleasure. And the courts have decided, the Supreme Court has decided that in both of those cases, that's not entirely the case, that sheriff's deputies and probation officers have the right to proceed to arbitration. And there's nothing in Pellrick, even though the 101 was enacted after General Drivers and Arrowhead were decided, there's nothing that specifically grants that authority or carves out court reporters in the statute. The legislature could have taken action to do it, but they did not. And that in and of itself is telling. Our position is that General Drivers and Arrowhead both apply, given the reasoning that the court made in addressing those decisions and applying arbitration to both sheriff's deputies and probation officers, despite the statutory grant of authority to serve at the pleasure. Again, there's nothing that the union is not challenging a judge's authority to remove an appointment. The union is simply asking that that authority does not extend to termination of state employment with the Minnesota judicial branch, unless there is an arbitration or a grievance process available. With respect to the 40 involuntary removals in the course of dealing, I briefed this pretty extensively. I won't get into it, but this has a very technical meaning in the labor context. And it's not just a course of performance, but it's effectively called acquiescence. And simply because the union didn't grieve these 40 alleged involuntary removals does not mean they can't do it moving forward. The other problem we have is that we don't know what these 40 or so involuntary removals were for. For example, if they were terminations for misconduct or for cause, or if they were separations from employment because the judge, the appointing authority, resigned, retired, or otherwise left employment. And that's something that the arbitrator addressed in his ruling on his request for on the request for reconsideration, that stuff, that information should be delved into and addressed at an arbitration hearing on the merits. And even if it was, to a large extent irrelevant, because certainly there's no dispute that the union is challenging these two discharges now. So just because they haven't in the past doesn't mean that they can't moving forward. And last, our argument is not that Pellrick controls. Our argument is that Pellrick can be read in conjunction with the CBA and Chapter 486. And again, I'm not trying to belabor the point, but that's effectively that Pellrick can be read to provide arbitration and the administrative complaint process to employees of the Minnesota judicial branch without impacting a judge's ability to remove their appointment. For those reasons, we respectfully request you reverse the district court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you to both counsel. We appreciate your comments that you've made to us today in response to our questions and your briefing as well. And so we will take the matter under advisement, issue a ruling within 90 days. You each have a good day.